up another broadcast tonight. My mistake, everybody.
What
caller from 661, you're on live with the Black Channel. Turn down your speakers.
Just did. Anthony from L.A.
Anthony from L.A., what's on your mind?
Hey, wanted to quickly make a comment about the I didn't get a chance to say nothing about it, about the Clippers. I think they did the right thing by playing. Let me explain why. they basically did that for the fans. I mean, Donald's got some money, but they got all the way up to that point for themselves and for the fans. Now, what I would have done was just go ahead and play. If we went all the way, we went all the way. Now we got some money and got some bargaining chips. You would have definitely had to break me off a piece of the team or something, or let me out my contract at the end of it. But I don't think it would have did anything by them not playing. Number two, I just finally today saw something with the Russia and China. Looked it up on YouTube, found out they got stuff a couple of years back where they were doing things like this. Looked into all the videos. Definitely something we should be worried about, I think. And as far as doing for ourselves, and we definitely got the numbers. I think, just like I heard on one of your broadcasts about bringing us over here, and they took our name from us. Now, back in the day, they a name meant something. You know, I'm with the Rockefellers. I'm the Carnegies. I'm the Vanderbilts. That's what we don't have. I don't know about you, but a lot of Black families that I know, including mine, none of us get along. And I think if you're able to throw yours, I mean, ever since I was little, I can hear people bragging about how many people at their wedding or how many people that went to their family reunion. You know, 500 people, 1,000 people. You got to make it at this point. Our backs are against the wall. You have to make it where if all the money that you're spending, and let's say you got a family reunion on July 1st, I would say a month before, you know how much money is being spent with the women getting their weaves done, the manis, panties, the new clothes, the guys getting their haircuts, the shirt, the shoes, the socks, the underwear. Then you got to buy clothes for everybody in the family, all the money it takes to get to the function. Never mind the money for the food and everything that you're going to buy when you get there, the lodging and the airfare. Add that up with everybody. If you're bragging about 500 people at your family reunion just to fly halfway across the country to eat Aunt Nunu's potato salad, you got 500 people in a room, it ain't no choice. If you're with this family, drop $50 in the box on your way in the door. Don't catch them when they leave, because then they're going to claim, we had to buy this, we had to buy that. You got there with all the money that you spent to get to a family reunion. Drop $50 in the box and commit that $50 every month for a year. That's $600. Now, if you got 500 people doing that in your family, because you should have a vested interest in driving up to Louisiana and say, you know what, the Blacks stay over there. Oh, I know. I think you got a co-host, Mona. I think I saw that she was Riverside. You know, the Lacheys stay over there on that part of the mountain. Just like Django, Candyland, all of these, the slave plantation. Everybody had a name. Black people don't have a name.
Let me find out here, because I got people on the line waiting. Let me just see if I can get you to get to your point.
My point is, you can tomorrow help yourself if you got that many people, because one thing we do have is numbers, and a lot of Black people's family, 400, 500 people, you having these family reunions, you make it where you put money in your box. And like I said, if you got 500 people putting in $50 a month, that's $300,000 a year. Chop that up in fours. Take that $75,000 that first quarter, and you tell every kid, you're going to college. You're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a physician. You're going to run a circus. Anything that's in society that people go to, that you know that they're going to go to, do it yourself. That second slot of $75,000, everybody got a cousin, or uncle that could take apart a car with a 12-pack of Vaseline and a bobby pin. Get that man a shop. Lease him some tools, whatever. Take care of your own self. Go get you a warehouse and a Costco card. And how you, we're in the best time to be living right now. You can order your groceries from your own store. You know, help out some of the older ones in the family that don't have enough to pay their rent. You know, that last notch of $75,000, you put that in interest earning account and you start buying property. I had bought a house in 2005, and I read an article where I live in Palmdale. They said it was like one of the fastest growing cities in the nation for the last 10 years. When I built a house up there, they had, I read an article that there was more people that own land in the Antelope Valley around the world than in the United States. And what they did was come and they built a lot of structures. Some of them are still empty to this day. But you know what? When they built them in 2005, it's not going to cost them the same to build it in 2014. Get your money together. Buy your own property, even if you got to hold it for a minute. You know you've got your lawyers and your doctors coming out of school. Now you got a place for them to do this.
That's going to work if you actually have enough capital to be able to pay all your expenses in addition to that. It's a wonderful idea. It only works if you, if you're going to build a bunch of houses and stuff. That only works if you have that kind of situation going where you have sufficient capital to do that.
Well, I didn't mean houses. I just meant saving the money.
Okay. About your first comments. Okay. About your first comments about Donald Sterling, about the Clippers not boycotting, just understand that that made us look extremely bad because that shows how weak black males are. That was not for the fans. The fans, most of the fans wanted them to boycott the game. That was not for the fans or for themselves. What that was a punk your ass move. Because what you really just told them is that you will become our boy and our trick if you have a shot at a title. And by the way, I don't see any championships on them just yet. So, I mean, but, you know, unless you're going to say they're going to win or something, but even if they did, think about that. Even if they did go to a championship, all they're doing is increasing the selling price for Donald Sterling. They are not going to get anything out of this except the ignominy and the shame of knowing that. Think about this one thing, and I made this point before. Think about the effect, the social effect on young black men around the country and around the world. Mm-hmm. And somebody in my chat room is saying that they got eliminated. So what you're saying is that they hoard themselves out for nothing. So,
not really. You know,
I believe they hoard themselves out for nothing because you said it was for the fans and in the playoffs and it was for the fans and this for themselves. Well, they didn't.
Well, if it wasn't for the fans wouldn't have shown up.
Okay, but
if
they
the fans
didn't
had a big issue, they wouldn't have showed up.
Okay, but what did they get that they weren't already going to get? They got eliminated and sent home anyway, so they showed up for a game so that they could play for a few extra games before getting knocked out anyway.
But my thing is, in my mindset, if I'm a Clipper, I already know I'm going to have an issue with this.
So what you're saying is you have no facts to it. It's just, well, in my mind, the way I feel is in the real world. No, not in the real world. We don't count that. But in my mind, I feel. Okay.
Well, for those of us who don't operate on feelings,
that doesn't matter. I don't care about a feeling. I care about power, wealth, and influence. And they gave up all three that night. They gave up all three. They got whored out and didn't get any power, wealth, or influence. As a matter of fact, they gave up power and they gave up influence. Think about the influence that those black males would have had they actually had some courage and stood up that game and not played at all. Stop talking for a moment. You've been rambling for a while. Stop talking and just listen.
Whoa. I was trying to make my point.
Okay, brother, you've been talking. You've been talking for a while, and you haven't really been going anywhere with it, but I'm trying to get somewhere.
To you, what you just said was...
I'm sure that you think your points are brilliant. I really do think you think that they are. I'm telling you, take a look in that chat room and see how many people agree with you.
I don't care about Jeff. I don't know them. They don't matter to you. They don't matter to me. My point was,
you're in the wrong place.
When you tell me that you're dealing with X, what do you know there's going to be
like
a female
now.
They didn't play?
You get to talk over people here. You're acting like a female now. You're supposed to stop talking. Females start.
There's a way that you ask a man to talk, brother. Don't just come at.
Okay. What happens here is that with individuals like that, and he's from California, y'all. California. What in the world is going on with these effeminized, trick-made black males in California? They talk like they're all on mollies, and then they get on the phone to call me because nobody else will listen to them. But in any case, and I'm not listening to them either. I just, all right, you're out of here. But like I say, his life really sucks, doesn't it? Black males, by showing up for Donald Sterling, take a look at everything you gave up. Think about how much power and influence they would have had they simply not played that game. Think about that for a minute. Think about how much power they would have had they simply not played. Think about the example that would have set for black men around the world had they not played. Think about how much more respect they would have from the NBA executives if they actually showed the executives that we have power, we have something that we can do, and we will pull the trigger. Not we might. We've shown you that we will do it. Think about what that would have shown people. Now, black males who've been tripping their mollies and rambling for 30 minutes, to them, they hit the bong and then they, hey, I think it was good. If we all get some Vaseline and some paper clips or bobby pins or whatever he was talking about, he said, if you get some Vaseline and some bobby pins, California. Caller from 904, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello. This is Chris from Jacksonville, Florida. How you doing today?
Chris from Jacksonville, what's on your mind?
Oh, well, what was on my mind is a lot of things. And a lot of what you said in your preamble. And the main thing, what I got out of it was begging is not an option anymore. That's not an option for black males anymore. You think you're going to stand in homeless shelter lines and beg for food stamps and lay up on your woman and all that stuff is over. There's a new paradigm. Either you get with black empowerment, participate in building the economy, or you're going to be wiped out. I don't even think it's going to get to Calcutta. You was being nice. I think the goal is complete extermination for black people. There is nothing. We are not needed in any area in the United States right now. Not even, I mean, I was thinking the other day, I said, well, I was thinking about the prison industrial complex, which is the most sophisticated system like of its kind in the world. And I was saying, well, why would this morph into what it is now? And I said, well, Bangladesh, Singapore, China, all these places where American corporations used to go and get cheap work, cheap labor, now it costs more to do business there, to do that type of thing, to go over there and just outsource jobs over there. Now those people are starting to ask for more money, which is natural. They start building a middle class and, you know, unions or whatever. I don't know if they have any unions, but I know they're starting to ask for more money. So if I was an American corporation like Hewlett-Packard or Northrop Grumman or whatever, I would say, well, what can I do about this? I said, we need to create a labor class right here in America. I don't have to worry about distribution costs. I don't have to worry about none of this. They're non-unionized. They can't ask for more money. You know, I don't have to pay them. I mean, if I do, all I have to do is feed them. Just, you know. And what they did was from the 70s up to now, they have built this labor class using the welfare system, basically, and the school-to-prison pipeline. Now you have all these prisons being built and all these black males in these prisons, and they're building everything. Yeah. I mean, they're making tea. A lot of this stuff we enjoy in Walmart that's cheap and we enjoy so much, it's made by prison labor. a lot of people don't know. We all, in a way, we all complicit in it. And I say the only way out of this is black empowerment. There's no, I mean, I read a lot, you know, and I think. And I was saying, this is it. You know, I mean, we don't have any, we've been boxing for a corner. Either we build for ourselves or we will perish. See, what it is, we need a principle. You know, they stay in a 12-step program. It says anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our principles, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Well, that is in a 12-step program. You don't have to like the person that's sharing, or you don't have to like the addict or alcoholic, but you can still get something from it. Using that principle as black empowerment, I don't have to like Jason Black. I don't have to like Johnny. I don't like Draco. I don't have to like Mona. But if my principle is black empowerment, I can still do business with them. We can still organize. We can still get things done. Using black empowerment as a guiding principle, it will govern a lot of behavior. Because I can say, it's the music I'm listening to. What does that have to do with black empowerment? The way I'm raising my child. Am I raising my child to empower black people? The relationship, this hood rat or this woman I want to get with, will this further my aims for black empowerment, or will it hurt it? The education, the career I chose, the education I wish to obtain, my ambitions, you know, my career choices. If we just use black empowerment as a guiding principle itself, that would serve to govern a lot of dysfunctional behavior we have, because it makes things kind of plain. You know, it makes things kind of plain. Either it's for black empowerment or it isn't. So you can throw away a lot of stuff. If it's just me going out here, getting a job, having sex with a lot of women, what does that have to do with black empowerment? Is me getting another degree in communications or me getting a degree as a doctor or engineer or a scientist, which one is more advantageous for black empowerment? It makes things kind of clear. I mean, I know we can't all deal in absolutes, but, you know, it kind of clarified things for me today. What do you think about that, Jason?
Well, it's about having priorities, or as Neely Fuller and Tariq Nasheed talked about, it's about having an agenda. We as black people do not actually have an agenda. We don't have anything looking at saying, you know what, this is what I'm about. This is what I'm for. This is the overriding principle by
exactly.
which I'm living my life. It doesn't happen that way. And because that's not happening, you don't have a bunch of people who are, you know, you don't have a bunch of people who are accomplishing something on a massive scale because there is no general consensus about what we are all here for.
Mm-hmm.
When you have people who do not have, you know, who do not have a sense of purpose, then what do you expect is going to happen? All you've got are, you know, 40 million black people, and that means 40 million competing special interests.
Mm-hmm.
They're not acting as a group. They're just acting. They're not doing something for their own benefit. They're just doing things. Like the previous caller, they're just doing things based on how it feels. And that's all of that femininity that's seeped into your males, that they're acting like females, you know. That's the kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
When I first started coming into the rooms of the 12-step program, first, I mean, I was younger. I was much younger then. And I was coming for the girls. And my sponsor say, if that's what's bringing you in here right now, let that be the reason why you come here. Because once you keep coming, you will find another reason to be here. As I kept coming, I did find other reasons to be here that was much longer lasting and more enduring than just seeking females. So in the beginning, if black empowerment, if a young guy say, well, if I get empowered as a black man, maybe more women, I can get more women. Let that be his guiding principle for that moment, because as he stay in black empowerment and he see what it does, there's other things he can do. When he can have something for his grandson. I'm not just talking about his son. I'm talking about for his grandson. Hey, the other day I bought a suit. And I went to buy a suit, and there was this little Arab boy. He was behind the counter. And I was finna give the store owner the money. He said, no, just give it to him. He knows what to do. He took the money, put in cash register, and gave me my change. He's gaining experience out of taking money out of our hands. This little boy was no more than 10 years old. But he was getting an experience in doing that. See, me, Jason Black, I'm kind of like this. In the interim, in the beginning, if we go and collect and start doing this thing, black people will have to accept temporary or lower standard of living. You can't get empowered if everybody rolling on dubs. You can't get empowered if everybody got a Gucci purse. You can't get empowered if everybody playing PlayStation and Xbox One. You can't get empowered if everybody got the latest iPhone and the latest Galaxy. That's not going to get it. It's going to take a sacrifice from everybody. It might be more people have to live in a house together. It might be a guy who, when he opened a business, he might have to sleep in his business for a minute. It might be that guy. It might be some people got to die. You know, it might be that type of thing there. But whatever it takes at this moment, because we don't have nothing else at this moment. I'm looking at young guys. This young guy did my yard. And I was asking, did he know anything else? You know, I wanted to do some stuff around the house. He didn't know anything. He didn't know anything else but to cut a yard. He didn't have any other marketable skills. We can't get anywhere with the women raising our boys. They don't have the skills. At some point, you got to have carpenters to build a house. You got to have mechanics. You got to have people who know how to repair the roads. You got to have people who know how to repair the roofs and heal the sick. I ask them all the time, I say, if white folks just pull back from the hospitals right now, how are we going to heal ourselves? If they close their grocery stores, how are we going to eat? I mean, it's some practical thing. We say in the program, if it's not practical, it's not spiritual. We have to become a more practical people. I hear some things, a lot of this spirituality, this metaphysical stuff, and I look at them and say, how can you do that to the people? We don't need that. We need practical solutions to our problems. And we could crowdfund if a guy can say, hey, and this is after 7 a.m., he said, yes, I got a business idea. And he said, I tell you what, I show you that I'm so serious about it, I'm going to put skin in the game first. I need $20,000 to start this mom-and-pop store. You want to get these Arabs up out of here? I'll be the one. We're going to get these Arabs and these Asians up out of our community because I'm finna start doing something. And he said, okay. So we say, I'll start it off first. I need $20,000, but I'm willing to throw a fourth in right now, $5,000. So everybody start contributing. You know, use this crowdfunding thing to start funding our businesses. Now, you always have the risk of those people who would just want to put $5,000 in, but people, when he get the $20,000, take the money and run. I don't know how you're going to govern that. I think that's probably, you know, I don't know how you're going to govern that. But I see a lot of potential with people that want to start businesses that can use this crowdfunding thing to do that. I don't care if it's even locally. You know, we can start crowdfunding and getting people going with their
issue.
Businesses.
Understand something. Crowdfunding, okay. As a person who has successfully done it, crowdfunding is one thing, but crowdfunding is really for new type of ventures, things that have not been there before. You know, a new film, a new TV show, a new invention. A store and real estate are things that you've got plenty of avenues to get that. For experimental things like, you know, inventions or creative endeavors, that's different. That's a legitimate source for crowdfunding. If you want to buy real estate, you need to go to a bank. Either that or you need to have enough investors with you that you all can get together for that. But to be totally honest with you, you need to go to a bank. And what I'm saying is that to open up a filling station is going to cost you $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are unable to get backing from a bank, I would never go into business with you for a gas station. Your finances are already upside down. You don't have enough financial acumen to be able to go into this venture with. You may be a nice guy, but you are unprepared for what you're about to walk into. And now you want me to put my assets into it as well. And that's where the disconnect is going to come in. When you start saying that I need to put my money out there with somebody who's not prepared. So the crowdfunding is one thing, but what you really want in this case is investors. But why is it that so many black men shy away from gathering investors or going to a bank? The number one reason that black folk do not is because most black people do not, most black males do not qualify for a loan. You just ask them what their credit score is, and they start holding their heads down. Oh, man, you see what happened was. And to be totally honest with you, getting collateral is a hassle for black males. It's a hassle because we can get black males as a group. Black males have no problem taking out as much money as you please to buy some new shoes. That is their, you know, that's going to be the kind of thing that they are going to rally for. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing they're going for.
You know, well, now that's where the thorn comes in. I know it's with a lot of young black males, and this affects a single motherhood. When you have a bunch of men, now, you're talking about something. Okay, we're just talking about something. Guys want to start a business. You get 10, 11, whatever, together get a business. You do have to have some form of hierarchy. At some point, you got to have some, any group, you know, with men, you got to have, you got the alpha male and it descends down the line. You got to have some group hierarchy, some male hierarchy. And I find that's real problematic because a lot of these males been raised with women. So they don't have that firm concept of male hierarchy. It's hard for them to tell each other what to do without force. I mean, how are you going to even form a militia group or form any civic organization, organization like that?
Beyond just that, though, what it is that as a group, black males as a group have never had to be disciplined. That is why so many black males gravitate to stories like 300 and they gravitate to football and basketball because what bastard baby makers have done by choosing to side white supremacy and betray their children, their sons, to the white supremacist state, what they've done is they've agreed to help white supremacy to destroy their sons by robbing their sons of the ability to engage in male camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
So as males, they don't actually understand how to work together with another male to accomplish a goal. All they know is how to be females, which means sex and begging. You see, there is no place for a man to be soft and nurturing and effeminate. And that is why white supremacy is paying for these women to betray their sons, and they're gladly, gleefully doing so. When you do that, you are sabotaging your own sons. So since slavery, they left the fields, and they need work together, but they don't know how to work together. And the only time that they are given the opportunity to do that is outlets that are provided to them by non-black people, because black folk don't see the value in creating structures like that. See, we used to have our own baseball league, but we all know what happened to that. And we could be running the NFL, but it's so much easier to beg these white folk because your mama told you, beg them now, son. Just beg them now. Don't worry about getting power and wealth for yourself. See if you can beg them white folks to give you something. Because if as a female looking at a situation like that, that's what she would be doing. You see, a female does not look at the NFL as a place where you compete. A female looks at pro sports as a place where you trick and come up. And that is the danger of single mothers raising their sons, because they cannot teach their sons the mind, the mental chess game. They don't know how to teach their sons the mental chess game of taking power, wealth, and influence. They don't know how to do that. All a female knows how to do in professional sports is trick. Can we just be honest? Your mother your mother would only have two choices if she tried to engage in the NFL. She would either start tricking or be totally quiet. But she could not go in there and hustle because she does not have anything to actually hustle with. A female does not have any tools that will assist her in a ultra-competitive environment. She doesn't have that. She doesn't have that. And because she does not have that, she does not have the means to instruct her son on how to do that. So what happens? The sons end up reacting like females. And that's how a bunch of grown-ass men can be hoe-slapped, smacked on the ass like tricks, and all of them standing on the sidelines of the NBA can't wait to get there on the court even after all that, because that is what trick behavior has done to them. That's what they've been raised and inculcated to do. So these black males today have not been given any black arenas where they can be taught to work together as a cohesive unit. But they are starving for that. They are starving for that, and they're yearning for that, and that is why they still gravitate to things like 300, even though the film is, what, 6-7 years old, and gravitate to things like the NFL and the NBA and even rap to a certain degree in gangs. They want that male camaraderie. All these attempts by these females to say he don't need his daddy, what you're saying is that he doesn't need to be a man. He doesn't need to embrace his masculinity. But that's what hoes do. Hoes don't care if the children suffer or not. Hey, I got the government check. And that's why I'm saying that these are traitors to us. Like Kwame Kilpatrick was a traitor in Detroit. Every bastard baby-making welfare hoe slut is a traitor to black society, because those males have needed to build a cohesive fighting unit since they have left those fields and have been unable to do so because they've never seen the example. So they don't even know what a cohesive unit of black men looks like outside of the venues that white people have created for them.
You know, I was looking at while you was talking, I was thinking about Hurricane Katrina, and this guy, he said a profound thing. I was sitting around, talking, and he said, you know something, shortly after Hurricane Katrina, black men and women got along. And he said, I just want you to think about that for a minute, Chris. I said, why wouldn't they get along? I thought about it. I said, for a moment, she could not depend on white people. The roles just immediately just, it just went, the men became protectors and providers, not all of them, but you had a lot of men, black men, doing heroic acts. And you say you will be surprised how submissive black women became in that situation. See, what's happening is, now, Mona said something. She said something, this was a few shows back, and she said that, you sisters, y'all better stop gloating. Y'all laughing at these brothers, which is real profound. Y'all laughing at these brothers not being able to get jobs and stuff. Sisters now are suffering. And then I thought about that, and I was saying, well, they suffered not because it's mission accomplished. It's mission accomplished. See, the whole goal of educating, employing her, and giving her Section 8 and all this kind of stuff was to keep her independent from us so we can't form strong families and communities that will eventually compete with him. So he created, he educated her, and he had mate work, and those that didn't do that, you know, he subsidized and things like that. But the day is approaching, well, that's becoming untenable. He won't be able to afford to, one, and he will lack the desire because mission has been accomplished. Black men have been crushed. So now there's a thing of him saying, well, why do I need to continue to engage in this? So Mona had a really good point there. That's why when you was talking there, I said, I don't think that day is going to continue on. Now, I hear white folks complain about welfare all the time. Y'all, welfare, yes, that, and other. I said, yeah, but it's funded every year. If y'all see what something's doing, why would you continue to fund it? Because you're supposed to be doing what it's doing. Lyndon B. Johnson, when he first offered welfare, and I mean, when they put this thing together, whatever, when he sent it down to Southern Democratic senators to say, we cannot agree on this in its current form, it won't make it to the Senate. He said, now, we said, what would it take to do? He said, you have to have a clause in there that no man over 18 can be in the home. Then it would make it through the Senate. So it was all intentional. It is what it is. But the only way out of all of this, brother, is black empowerment. That needs to be our guiding principle, and that's it. Hey, man, nice talking to you, bro. Black First.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, bro. Black First, as always. And definitely the telephone number is 646-787-1933. I had to restart things there again, so definitely you probably need to call back if you weren't able to get through here shortly before. 646-787-1933. As black people, understand that we made the story. When we did our piece, when Professor Black Truth had posted up originally, we're all Detroiters now. at the end of it, you remember saying that if we don't wake up, we're all going to go the way of the Motor City. And that is exactly the point that I want you to take away from this. That because we as black people have failed to learn the lessons of history, we are now being doomed to repeat them, as silly as it seems. You see, as a collective group, black men are supposed to be leading. They're supposed to be. But they don't know how. And because they don't know how, they are out here just scrapping and fighting and scraping to survive. They don't know how to present a situation to their women and their children that helps them to live and to survive and thrive. They don't know how to do that. Is the treason against your children that I'm referring to. That when you groom your sons to be the type of homo thugs that you wish you, the type of weak males who do not build and do not defend that you wish you could have found, that's the treason against the people. And I'm going to tell you all what's going to happen next. What they are doing is they are slowly but surely maneuvering and steering the crime of Detroit. Detroit is going to be a model for the country. They're not going to get rid of the black side of town. They're going to keep that there. But Detroit is going to be a model for the country of how you can take crime and take your criminal element and you can just fold it back onto the neighborhood from which it came. They are going to take the crime of Detroit and they are just going to fold it back onto itself, back into the neighborhoods they came from. That's what they're going to do. They're going to take the crime of Detroit, fold it back onto itself, and the next target of your criminals will be the parents who spawned them, the elders who cheered the parents who spawned them, and the hoes who are getting public assistance. That's going to be the next target. As they remove the criminal element from threatening the businesses. See, that's where your police are going. You all remember in Hidden Colors 2 and KRS-One, it said that the original purpose of police was to guard property. That the original purpose of police was to protect your property. Well, who has the most and most valuable property? Business owners. And in Detroit, what did they just show you that they're concentrating their policing abilities on? They are concentrating their policing abilities on protecting the businesses, on protecting the enterprises. That's what they're focusing their power on. The neighborhoods, damn y'all. We're not appointing a task force to deal with your ghettos. We're appointing a task force to deal with the business owners who are having trouble out of the scum coming from the ghetto. We're not appointing a task force for your ghettos. Now, that just flew over a bunch of people's heads. And I understand that. That just flew way over a lot of people's heads. I don't understand. But that's because you don't have a business. That's because you don't have one and you've never seen anyone who did have one. So they're all foreign concepts to a lot of you. But to some of you, they're not. And that's why this is your opportunity to learn that this is what you see. And for the brothers in Detroit, this is your opportunity to recognize the threat to you. Is very real and is not going away. They have positioned you so that you will have no choice but to return to the neighborhoods from which you came and feast on the people around you. Now, do you all understand, though, that the threat is not going to go away? Brothers, that's why I had to say it like that. This is real and it's not going to go away. Why do you say that, TBA? Because when you return to the neighborhoods, it becomes a no-lose situation for white supremacy. Sending you back into those neighborhoods becomes a no-lose situation for the bad guys. He now has you in a trick bag that they can't lose. Because you see, if you go to the neighborhood and you successfully rob or kill the little old people, or the younger people, or the hood rats, white supremacy smile, because white supremacy is one. And if you lose, if you get caught, or if you try to jack somebody's girl, or you jack your own, and she calls the police on you, then the prison industrial complex awaits. And once again, white supremacy smiles because you lose. White supremacy will be smiling because you have lost. You've lost. This is a real life game of cat and mouse. It's a real life game of do or die. And the side that wins is the side that eats. And I mean that literally. The side that wins will be the side that eats. The side that loses will not eat. Just that simple. The side that loses will be the side that does not eat. And as black males, you've been maneuvered into a position where you will be denied the ability to eat. And they will use those ghettos and those slums that spawned you in order to exterminate you. Can you imagine, brothers and sisters, think about this. I want you to think about this for a moment. Do you understand that they are using this as a form of ethnic cleansing? They are ethnically cleansing black people from the metropolitan areas of Detroit, exactly what we predicted, and we're all Detroiters now. That was why I kept mentioning over and over and over again about my experiences in Manhattan. I was there at 2 o'clock in the morning and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I told you all, for those of you who are not from there, I recognize what the hell I was seeing. That was economic genocide. But the nice term they like to use for economic genocide is gentrification. When you ethnically cleanse an area through economic means, that's called gentrification. And in downtown Manhattan, you can see that they have set off all of these biological economic bombs. They have set off these huge economic bombs in Manhattan that have annihilated the black population. That you go downtown in Manhattan and there are no black. I had whole blocks where I was walking around downtown Manhattan and there were no black people. There were white people. There were Latinos. There were Asians. There were Arabs. There were Asians. Indians. But there were no black people. Whole blocks I was going up and down and there were no black people to be seen. How can you have 20, 30,000 people on the streets and no black people anywhere? I'm walking up and down Park Avenue, Madison Avenue. Hell, y'all saw the damn trailers. You saw where I was. You all have seen the trailers and you saw where I was. And you saw for yourself there were no black people out there. Ferrari dealership, but no black people. National Bank, but no black people. They removed black people a long time ago. And they used their economy to ethnically cleanse you. And now that they have seen that this can and will work in a place like New York, they are now moving on to places like Detroit, D.C. I saw it in D.C. with my own eyes. And very soon after this, Atlanta. you are going to have a situation where there are black children in America who live in New York City and yet have never been to Manhattan. Did you all know that? You are going to have a situation here where you have black people, black children, who will have lived all their lives in New York and have never been downtown to Manhattan. Imagine going to school if you're white. Let me repeat that again. Imagine if you are a white child in school, knowing that most of your black classmates, if you have any, never even been to downtown Manhattan. They live in the same city with you, but they've never been to downtown because they can't afford to go. And even if they could, there is no place in downtown Manhattan for them to go to. That was the scenario that we were trying so desperately to explain to people. And we're all Detroiters now. That was what we were trying so desperately to articulate, and no one was listening. We tried to tell you, do you understand that you are not 100 years away from this happening? You are only 5 or 6 now. We have crossed that Rubicon of decades of waiting for this to happen. It will now happen in years, not decades. Years. Not decades. Most of the people that you listen to on the radio, on the internet, they cannot tell you these things because they have not been, they have not seen, they do not know. Of course, I had already surmised these things before I went, but after going, yeah, there's no question about it now. And imagine what's going to happen when you see that exact same dynamic play out in Detroit. Have you all thought about that? What is the future for black children in Detroit, when half of them will have lived in that city all their lives and yet never been to downtown Detroit? Has anyone thought about or considered the absolutely devastating impact that that's going to have on those children? Not only are they not cultured on a world-class level, they're not even cultured on a locally one. They will have spent their whole lives from the ages of 1 to 15 having never left the housing projects that they raised in, having never left the 5-block radius that they were raised in. You are realistically looking at a situation where black people will not even have the ability to, you won't even have a corner store in a lot of those places. You're just going to have a bunch of dusty males who are going to be sitting around trying to do the best they can, hoping that they will come up with some means by which they can navigate this system. The problem is no one actually sat them down and explained to them what navigating the system is. They don't know. They don't know that people can, a lot of them, most people understand that you can be economically maneuvered. I mean, most people understand that. But they do not understand how they are being economically maneuvered every day. And what that means is that your children are being shoved off into this. And they do not understand why or how, because you decided that having children was an easy way to get a check, and you didn't think for a second about, by the way, what am I sending these children into? What exactly am I sending these children into? And they don't know. That, brothers and sisters, is the very definition of genocide. That is the definition of genocide. Most people have not had the opportunity to discuss this as in a rational format, and I'm going to give it to you all today. And I want these things to be sobering. A lot of people asked about 7 a.m. And they were asking themselves, well, what do I do? How exactly am I crafting that? I'm crafting it so that it can be sobering. That's the point. Want people to be happy with these things more. I think the most dangerous thing that we have done is try to make people happy with things. That's been the biggest mistake that we've had. Instead of actually telling people the truth about these things, we have instead chosen that we're going to try to lie to them about these things. My broadcast gets hundreds of people listening live, but most people leave the place saying, because I don't attempt to entertain people. I'm telling you that in Detroit, as black people, they are going to show you, because people tried to lie after Hurricane Katrina, and they tried to say that, oh, it was a bomb and the levees and this, that, and the other. It wasn't the levees. You were the poorest people in America. And Detroit, you are now the poorest. And what are they going to do to you now? What are they going to do to you now? Are economically engineering you and maneuvering you to genocide now? Now, if you believe you have time for that, that's fine. I don't think we have any more time, and that's why I've engaged in that. If you haven't been to the website yet, you do want to go to 7ammovie.com. That's 7ammovie.com. You can click in the middle where it says to get involved. Definitely, and that's another thing right there, is that if you all remember Issa Rae when she put out Awkward Black Girl, we are closing in on passing what she received. We're closing in on that. And we want to have the opportunity here to show the world that that's not what we're going for. That we have an opportunity to make some real history here. Now, I don't know if Black Enterprise Magazine is going to call me like they called her, but okay. I'll be glad to see that. That's perfectly fine. This is the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, Jason Black. I'm just let's just check a few things here. Forgive the slight interruption. I just need to check on a few things. We have a rare opportunity to change that if we are so inclined. But once again, that's going to depend on how inclined we are to do that. Go ahead and check the telephone lines here. Caller from 313, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how's it going today, brother?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is JB. I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, you're calling from the belly of the beast. What's on your mind?
I don't have all the particulars, but I'm from Detroit. I spend a lot of time in Atlanta. My job allows me to frequent those cities, so I am from Detroit, like I said. However, when I came back home, I seen, like, you know, a lot of black people, they were all excited about what I heard from the news, They said that Chase Bank is supposed to be working in conjunction with the city to bring over $100 million to the city and provide jobs and everything. And I've been listening to your broadcast, and I'm trying to educate my people about black economic empowerment, and I've been trying to tell them that it's not about the jobs. And I remember back in the days when I would go to, like, Ford, GM, Diesel, and they walk, and I walk in there, and I try to get a job application, and they say, son, we got job applications for 4 years, you know? And people in Detroit, they just have that working mentality. My father, he worked for the post office. He was prior military. He had his degree. He could have been an officer in the military. He went the enlisted route. He got out. He worked in the post office. My mom basically stay-at-home mom, you know, menial jobs and things of that nature. Not really nothing great, nothing to brag about, but, you know, they, you know, did what they had to do, I guess, or did what they thought they had to do. But, you know, people in Detroit, they have that working mentality where that's, you know, that's all they want to do, you know. And I myself going off to college and coming back home and having the experiences that I had and reading the books that I've read and, you know, looking at the world from a different level, you know, I don't want that for myself. I don't want that for my progeny. I don't want that for their prosperity. You know, I don't want to be that great-grandfather, that grandfather to see everybody just working and struggling and having to start over, being born into, you know, poverty because I myself, I didn't do nothing for them. And I see it now, you know, my elders, my family, you know, they're not going to die. They're going to die eventually, but they're not going to leave me with anything. You know, they haven't left an inheritance. My grandmother, when she passed away, when I first went off to school, she gave me $3,000. And I thank her for that. You know, it took me a little bit further than what I could go, but, you know, other than that, there was nothing left for me or nothing for me to inherit. So I have to build something for my children so that they can inherit something. And, you know, it starts with building a business and having, you know, something that the people can come to, a service, you know, service and goods and things of that nature. But, you know, in terms of, like, the people that's in my age group, and I'm, like, 32 now, and the people that I came up with, even if, you know, I have friends that are, you know, work for the federal government, they're federal law enforcement or physician assistants and things of that nature. Everybody's still working for somebody else. And maybe, you know, we'll get together and we'll build a business and we'll, you know, buy into a franchise or we'll build from the ground up. But as of right now, I think I'm the only, you know, person within my peer group that has that mentality where I have to, you know, build for myself and build for my future and stuff like that. Even if my friends are talking about building for their futures and building for their future generations, they're still doing it from a working mentality. I haven't heard any of them talk about, you know, investing or you know, starting their own business and just bring it back home. It's like Detroit people, You know, I love my city. I hate it in the winter. I love it in the summer. But people here in my city, they have that working mentality. That's all they want to do is work. And every Sunday, they get religiously ready, spiritually pimped. You go to the corner stores. You see the Arabs. You see the Arabs. You see the Jews and the white people and the other every other race of people taking out of our community. And I don't mean to sound annoyed, and this is my last point. I do work in the airline industry, so I work in an industry where one of the things I do reservation and sales. So every time I call up, there's two things that – every time people call me in, there's two things that piss me off. One, people call in and they book trips from Detroit, or I know they could be coming from the surrounding area, but it's a lot of Asians and stuff that's booking trips coming into Detroit. It's a lot of Asians and stuff booking trips into Africa. Now, I really can't speak about the Africa portion, but right before I made my exodus, I left Detroit and I went to Atlanta. I seen, like, busloads of Asians going downtown, like, looking around like it's something to look at, like, you know, and I was wondering, like, what were they there for? And they're here to invest into our city, into a city that's 85%, 90%, 93%, 92% black, and they're going to force the black people out, force the black people, you know, into extinction. They're going to, you know, just continuously take over because black people aren't building businesses. They're not building, they're not having no stakes, no claims, or anything within the city. And it's two major streets that I'm concerned about. One is Woodward Avenue. Well, three. One is Woodward Avenue. One is Cash Tech. And another one is Grand River. And back in the day, you could see, you know, like all the businesses up and down those streets where you see black-owned businesses, shop stores, barber shops, candy stores, and things of that nature. And then I guess towards the end of the crack epidemic era and all that stuff, all those things got firebombed and got bombed down and got destroyed. But you know, all these other races of people are coming back in and they're taking over the land. And, you know, you have the hardest, roughest neighborhoods in Detroit. And I've seen it, you know. You see white people out there jogging, running and stuff. And I'm like, whoa, this is Joy Road. This is Detroit. This is what it is now, you know. But, you know, I'm not saying that to brag, but I'm just saying that to say that, you know, I wish my people would just kind of wake up, you know, and you know, I sent money for the 7 a.m. Documentary, and I'm trying to get a lot of other people to basically, you know, wake up and build and stuff like that. Like I said, I don't have all the numbers, all the facts, the figures. You know, I'm just speaking from observation. I'm speaking from my heart, and I'm speaking from, you know, the standpoint that I want my colleagues to wake up with me. I want my, you know, I want to build something for my city. I want to have a hand in giving back, you know. And that's all I got to say, Black First.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you a few things here, since you are from there. Did you hear the story that I read about, Carjack City? I mean, do you know exactly what they're talking about there, or what part of town they're referring to?
Well, I don't know what type of town that is to refer to, but I remember when I was growing up, that was kind of popular with, you know, some of the guys that I was coming up with, and a lot of my friends, you know, got beat up, got their teeth knocked out, trying to, you know, running up and into people's cars and stuff like that. Recently, my parents, they got their truck stolen. And my dad, he did a boneheaded, stupid move. He pulled up to the gas station, one that's like on the borderline of Detroit. It's a main street. It's called Telegraph. It separates Detroit from Redford, which is one of the most, if you go west, it's one of the closest suburbs. And he just stepped out the car, and he went to the ATM, and some punk just jumped in the car and just took off, you know. But that, I mean, that wasn't a carjacking. A couple months ago, Pastor Winans, he got carjacked up there trying to floss on the west side. If you look at Detroit from a social aspect, from a social aspect, what black people will say, the west side is where the people who have a little bit of money stay, and the east side is where all the broke people, where if you really had some problems with somebody, you would go get your cousin on the east side because he or she would, you know, be willing to put in that work for you or whatever, you know, to handle your problems. So the carjackings and things like that, you know, I live in Atlanta most of the time. and I come back to see my people and things of that nature on the weekends and when I can. But if I had to say where the carjackings was taking place at, I would, you know, say it would definitely be on the west, on the east side, as you know, things are a lot more impoverished over there, and the people over there really don't have anything. You know, Detroit, there's no businesses in Detroit. I've never had a job in the city of Detroit, including when I worked for the city. I was in 1994-95, I was in a program because I could draw and I like to paint and things of that nature. The city had like a summer program for students of a particular age, like middle school, high school age. That was the only time I ever worked in my own city. You know, I've always had to work, do retail out in the mall and stuff like that, out in Southfield or Northland or Fairlane Mall. You know, I've never had a job in my own city. And the only industry, the only businesses, the only jobs are downtown, where you could work for the government or something like that. There's nothing on the west side. There's nothing on the east side. Everything is like out in the suburbs and stuff like that. So in terms of the carjacking and stuff like that, I would say it would take place on the east side. That's the most the most grimiest place in Detroit. You really don't see that going along too much in Detroit. I mean, on the west side. On the west side, you know, you still got the people that are still working at the GMs, the Fords, the Chryslers, the post office, and things of that nature. I come from a rough neighborhood on the west side. I live in Blightmore, which is, you know, it used to be, they said it used to was a community of cops and Irish people and stuff like that. And we stay in a brick house. And the wooden houses are where, if you really look at it, the wood houses or the houses that's just straight wood, those are really like the poor people. The brick houses are, you know, well kept. The lawns are maintained. But it's like right across the street. You see, like, the poor people, the houses burnt down and stuff like that. That's I live like, or my parents still stay in one of the worst communities on the west side. They call it Eliza Howe, but it's still really like Brightmore, the area or whatever. But, you know, to answer your question, and I know I talked around it, but that would primarily be on the east side, where you have people who don't have nothing. They don't have nothing, and they kind of like, you know, forced to live that life, you know, to take and things of that nature. And sadly, you know, it's sad but true. You know, if I die in Detroit, it's gonna be at the hands of another black person. And I tell people this, that, you know, when I see them, you know, out and about, and I try to lecture to the young brothers, not even lecture, but try to talk to them. You know, I say, you know, if you die or if I die, you know, it's 9 times out of 10, it's gonna be at the hands of another brother. There's not an Arab, there's not a Jew, there's not a white man, there's not a Mexican, there's not a Chaldean, there's not no other race of man that's trying to run up on me and try to cause harm to me, hurt harm or danger to me, but my own people, you know. And I wish the senseless violence would stop in Detroit, but it's kind of crazy.
Well, but they consider the ramifications of that, because here's my problem with it, okay, because I don't live in Detroit, so you say the east side is where things are really messed up right now. And, okay, if the east side is really messed up, that means that's where the black folk are. Well, should I say, what's the highest concentration of black folk in Detroit right now, north, south, east, or west?
Well, you can take the south out of this, because the southwest is like, is where all the Mexicans stay, the Mexicans, Hispanics, Latinos, whatever the classification you have. Then the north end is like our true north side. And I would say the west side. I would say the west side is where you have the highest concentration of black people, but it's black, period. But we have, like, black people that stay, like, out in, like, Southfield and Redford, but, and those are, like, those were back in the 90s and probably even before then, like, the good suburbs and stuff like that. But now that, you know, for lack of better words or phrases or whatever, now that black people are moving out to the suburbs, to those areas, you know, you see, like, a lot of the ghetto ratchet behavior and stuff like that moving out that way. But, you know, when I was growing up, you know, and I would take the bus you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning all the way over to the east side. You know, if I didn't stay with my grandmother, my high school was smack dab across the street from where my grandmother stayed, like in the New Brewsters, which is they tore down like a portion of like the old Brewster projects, and they built the Brewster homes. But I stayed with my grandmother over there, and if I didn't see if the bus driver wasn't white, I didn't see a white person until I got to school. You know, I didn't see any other race of person until I got to school. So back then, I would say the concentration of black people was like a strong, like 96-95%. But the whole city itself, northeast, west, excluding the south, the southwest, you could put downtown Detroit, you could consider that south. I would say like the highest concentration of black people is still on the west side, east side. I mean, like we're everywhere. But I have recently started seeing like white people move in the hood. The neighborhood, and that, now that we don't have neighborhoods, we just have places where black people stay because we don't have businesses and things of that nature. But in the neighborhood, I started seeing, like, you know, white people move into the neighborhoods, into some of the roughest places. Just like Dre Road is like one of the main streets, but it's like a rough neighborhood, and I see white people out there jogging all the time. Jogging with their dogs, like jogging with their pets and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that nobody doesn't have a right to jog, but, you know, it was a time when we were growing up, and me and my friends, we came to the conclusion if a white man was in the neighborhood, he wanted one or two things. Either he was there for prostitution or he wanted drugs. You know, but now they're moving in the hood. Now I'm not talking about the quote-unquote the wigger or the quote-unquote white person that's impoverished and they grew up in the hood. Or they grew up in the neighborhood, or they, you know, moved from somewhere else, and then they moved into my neighborhood, or they moved over on Joy Road, or into a Brightmore, or something like that. I'm saying, like, these are, like, you know, like young white, you know, I consider them to be young white, you know, up and coming professionals. I even seen them on a boulevard down the street from Hitsville, USA, where, you know, where Berry Gordy and Motown and stuff was, where, like, houses were like condemned and stuff, you know, like these young white people, you know, building these houses and things of that nature, and they are refurbishing them, rehabbing them, and they're moving right in our neighborhoods. And in Detroit on the west side, you know, they have another way where I see, like, I don't want to say infiltration, but where you see like the white people or the young white people coming back into the community, they're building like these little farms or these little greenways, or they'll take like an abandoned house and they'll board it up and they'll paint a rainbow, or they'll paint like a son or children playing on the house and stuff like that. And they call it like blight busting and stuff. And I know it looks good and stuff like that, but, you know, I just wish that, you know, the brothers and the sisters, you know, that were older than me, you know, the older generations, and now that it's upon me and it's at my door and I have to come back and do it, and not to say that I have to come back and do it as it's a burden, but I wish that we would have done those things, you know, a lot earlier than when you see, like, these white people doing it and stuff like that. And another thing, you know, I was in the barbershop today, and, you know, the barbershop, you know, that's a black country club and stuff like that. And everybody was just so giddy about, you know, like having, you know, this white mayor, you know, Mayor Dugan or whatever. You know, I didn't even vote for him. You know, I was in and out, back and forth from here to Atlanta and even in Milwaukee in 2013. But they were like, you know, it was something like you said, like in one of your videos, it's like, you know, black people, you know, just give it, I can't say how you said it, TBN, but a lot of black people, they were, you know, they voted for him, but they didn't have no expectations about, like, what they wanted from him, you know, what they expected of him, you know, how he was going to work in their best interest. They were just happy that, you know, somebody was in there and he was going to do away with all this crime and give something back and, you know, to me, it still seemed like they wanted the handout and they wanted, you know, just something, you know, something for nothing. Nobody wants to work, you know, for themselves. Nobody wants to build anything, you know. I don't know if they're afraid or what, but, you know, your original question, what you asked me, the highest concentration of black people, I really couldn't tell you. We would be everywhere except for the Southwest, which constitutes a large number of Hispanics and Mexicans and stuff like that. Oh, that's another thing. That's another thing, TBA. Let me tell you this. In the Southwest, where all the Hispanic Mexican people live, they call it Mexican Town, right? We have in the north end, the north side of Detroit, we have a neighboring suburb, which people still consider Detroit. I still consider Detroit. It's called Hamtramck. That's where all our Polish people live, right? So they got their little Polish German town, but there's no black town. But when you go into Mexican Town and stuff like that, where all the Mexicans got their businesses, their restaurants and stuff like that, you know, you don't see none of the gang culture, none of the gang none of the gang graffiti and stuff like that. And you know, I grew up in a gang environment. We have a gang environment where I stay at and stuff like that. A bunch of young punks and stuff like that. And I engaged in that behavior. You know, when I came of age, you know, obviously my father, he was a military guy, and coming back to Detroit, I was born here, and having the opportunity to live overseas and living in other places, you know, it was kind of like get down and lay down. But you know, just seeing Mexican Town now as an older man and stuff like that, I don't see none of the gang graffiti, none of the trash, none of that stuff, you know, because the Mexicans, you know, they keep, even though they have the gang element over there, they keep them young boys, them young punks and females, they keep them in check and stuff like that. You know, none of that stuff where we work at and stuff like that, right? But the black businesses or the barber shops and stuff like that, you know, you see all the debris, you see down the burnt down houses, you see the aftermath of drugs and stuff, how it has just ravaged our city. You know, it's crazy, and I hope we can get it together. I got friends that kind of stay like on that main, one of the main streets, Woodward, like right by Tiger Stadium. And this is one of my friends. He's like a physician assistant, and his wife, she has a good job and stuff like that. And he's talking about, man, you know, we're about to move. And I'm like, man, do not move. At least don't move and don't sell that property until I get I get my money up, you know, to buy it and stuff like that. Because, you know, they're forcing, you know, all of the black people that were downtown, mainly who stayed in the projects or even who had the houses in that area, out of that area, you know. And things are so, you know, desolate and despair in Detroit. You know, you could stay on a block that had one house on your block or have two houses on a block, or you have a house right here, and then it's like a landfill. Now, I would say like a landfill, like where one house was at, right? But then you have like a landfill where like 10 houses used to be at, and you're the only person on the block. Or you have, you know, a house right here, and then a big old landfill, and then a house all the way at the end of the block. You know, you see that commonly on the east side. On the west side, you see it too, but we still have the remnants of the drug era, and not to say that it's not over, but, you know, the crack epidemic and stuff like that, where the houses are still burnt down, they're still not knocking them down and stuff like that. It's
crazy. But the reason they're not doing that is because that's the environment that they want you in.
Right.
That's the environment that they want you in. And my point was that, do you see how, like you said, they're basically cordoning everybody off, you know, into that east side? You said if you have to rule out the south and the west,
right,
then that means they're shoving everybody over there, to the black folk over to the east. Now, of course, going up north is not an option. Now they're trying to head off into Canada. So they're basically trying to corral y'all all off, figure out how to corral you all off into the east. So if you leave the state, you can leave and go to New York or something, I guess. I don't know. But if they can just shovel you off, then that's all they have to do is corral you off into that east side of the state. The east side of the city. Don't you understand that that is, man, that's a hell of a situation they got you in if they got you there. They got you boxed in, and you literally have nowhere to go. So you went from being broke all over the city to all being piled up on the east side of the city. Don't you know that now we've created an economic barrier, And what you said before about, you know, a lot of folk who work for the federal government and stuff like that, well, you know, if they're federal cops or whatever, do you know what that means? That just means that everybody will be people who either work for the government or are under the supervision of the government.
That is true. And you bring up a good point because I got a promotion on my job, so it's going to afford me, the ability to stack a little bit more cash. And since you've been talking about black economic empowerment, you know, the first step that I'm taking for myself is to, you know, pay off my bills, pay off my student loans, and to get out of debt. That's the first step that I'm taking for myself. Aside from there, my father being prior service, my grandfather being prior service, and my uncles, and even myself being prior service, I was thinking about, you know, I had all my paperwork together to go back into the military. And, you know, just into the reserves. And you know, I just kicked that idea to the side. I'm not knocking my other fellow service members and things of that nature, because sometimes a soldier doesn't have the opportunity to voice his or her concern or say that they need this or they're trying to do this. Somebody's just trying to, you know, get college paid for. And at the time, that's what I was trying to do. However, you know, I thought about that being an option, but that's not even an option right now, because to me, it would just be a waste of my time and stuff like that. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be an agent for the government. I don't want to, you know, be another number to them. I don't want to go to war. You know, I don't want to be deployed. And I was lucky enough to not be deployed. You know, and I like the quote that you said about Khalid Muhammad a couple of broadcasts ago. Let me live my life for my people, or let me live my life and something to the effect, if I can't live my life, let me die for my people. I don't want to die for the country. I don't want to do that. I made that obligation before, and I was lucky enough.
Not for the country. What I mean is that. Do you understand that if they make you into this de facto prison city, that essentially you'll only have the folk who are in jail and people who are watching them?
As the
railroad magnate Jay Gould said, I can pay half the poor to kill the other half. Most people do not understand that when you have power and wealth, you can actually maneuver that. I can just pay half the poor to kill the other half. And I'm telling you that is what I see shaping up in Detroit, Compton, Watts, Houston, D.C., Brooklyn, Bronx, Baltimore, Atlanta, Detroit, Lansing, Benton Harbor. I can go down the list. I see that dynamic shaping up in all those black enclaves, all of them.
That is true. And just the last, you know, observation is that, you know, we used to have many stations in Detroit, you know, when I was growing up, and that was like a mini police station where the cops actually walked the beat, and you actually had, like, you know, the big police station, the main central police station, and another central police station downtown, and the mini stations would be spread out throughout the community. And, you know, they close down police stations like it's crazy, you know, and I don't know why, but recently what I've seen is, you know, I've seen a spike in the state troopers being employed and applications being out there, and, you know, folks saying, oh, state troopers is hiring, but, you know, that's the only, you know, the police that you see in the community now is state troopers. You don't even see, like, your friendly, or I don't want to say friendly, but you don't even see your average black police officer, like, walking the beat. And, you know, these guys.
Now, why do you think
that
is? Why do you think that is, though? But why do you think that is?
Because they're here to kill us off, to corral us into their jails.
The reason why you have so many state police is because they are under the direct authority of who?
The governor?
Thank you. Thank you. And Detroit may be a black city, but the state is not.
Right.
So if you're white folk in Detroit and the Negroes are calling all the shots, then how do you neutralize that in the most unbelievable way possible? You abdicate control to the state, where you do still have authority. And what have they moved in? Your emergency finance managers, overseen by the governor, because democracy is just sometimes too inconvenient. But let's just be totally honest. Can I be totally honest with you all? I made my video about voters the wasted black vote and how I explained to people that voting is power and the power to vote really is wasted on black people because we don't know how to use it. We don't know how to leverage it. We don't know what it's for. And when we do vote, we keep empowering all the wrong people. We keep empowering all the wrong people. You put in Barack Obama. You put in Kwame Kilpatrick. You put in Monica Conyers. You put in John Conyers. We can go down the list.
Black and TV, I'm not sure. I've seen.
They cannot properly steward the power and the right to vote. So thing is, even if you didn't have this emergency finance manager thing, you'd be right where you are by some other means.
Right, and I was, another thing that I heard on the news when I was in the barbershop, they said that Congressman John Conyers is not even on the ballot to even run for re-election because they had some, allegedly, they had some a situation with the voter registration or something like that, so he didn't get enough signatures to even be placed on the ballot, and I think that that may just be some backlash when his wife Monica Conyers, you know, got him, you know, messed up, and it made me think about something that you know our enemies, you know, our adversaries, you know, they'll wait 10 years, 20 years to come back and take over the communities that they lived or to put their businesses back into our you know, our areas and stuff like that, or to, you know, to get you up out of the game. They'll wait, you know. And this whole thing, what you just talked about, how they're like, you know, forcing us over to one area and stuff like that, it's not really that they're forcing us. It's that it's like militarily, it's like we're in a siege. We're in a siege. They have us in a siege. You know, they have us surrounded by all sides. You know, they're taking all our resources. We can't get proper food. We can't get proper jobs to create businesses for us. You know, they have us in a siege. They have a siege operation around us. They want our extermination. But the thing is that they want to use us to kill us, and so they don't have to have their hands in and stuff like that. We're surrounded on all sides in Detroit, you know?
Do black men up there understand the dire situation they're in?
Unfortunately, they don't. You know? The black men, they don't. They think that wearing Cartier glasses and driving you know, cars that they're renting or cars that they have a lease off of, or putting credit in their mama name or in their grandmother name, and everybody's trying to be a rapper. You know, I have fraternity brothers that are trying to come out with rap songs or trying to create some type of record label, you know?
I mean, how old are they now? Because you said you're in your 30s.
Well, the ones that are trying to create, like, a rap label, I would say he's in his early 30s, and the young guys that are trying to rap are, like, in their mid-20s. They're,
okay, you know what?
But
you know what? I'll say that. I'll take that. I'll take that, okay? I'll accept that as an answer. Now, let's deal in the real world for a moment here, okay? I'll accept what you gave me for an answer. He wants to start his own rap label. I'll take that. See, that's what we do here at the Black Channel. I'll take that. I'll take it. Now, here's my question. My question is, do they want, what kind of equipment do they have?
You know what? I haven't even seen this whole operation. I come from the mindset that, you know, we have enough.
Okay,
athletes.
Ask the question. The question is, do they have a studio of their own? A fully
I don't know his arrangement.
Fully equipped modern studio.
I would say no.
Okay. In other words, they're hoping to get discovered.
Basically.
30 and 32 and 34 or older and still waiting for some white man to come riding into town to save them. If that doesn't sound like the females who raised them, then people ain't listening very carefully.
All right. And I had a status on my Facebook a while ago. I said something to the effect that, you know, I don't, you know, I said that I know my God. I don't want to talk about religion. You know, I know where I stand politically. I don't want to talk about politics. All I want to talk about is black economic development. If you're not talking about money, if you can't show me what the money is, if you can't show me what you're doing, what you're building, you know, I don't want no time for you. I don't have no time for you. I pulled away from a lot of things. I pulled away from certain social groups that I was a part of, even my fraternity. You know, not to say I love my fraternity and I love the guys that I came up with and stuff like that. I love my family and stuff. But if you're not building, then what are you doing? If you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. Or even if you don't see yourself as part of the problem, I don't have no time for nobody that's just playing around, that's just hanging out, that's just shooting the breeze. I don't want to do that. You know, I did that enough for my 20s. I did that enough when I was in college, and I really have to build. I kind of even see myself a little bit behind the ball. You know, there are certain things that I need to do that I could have been doing faster, I could have been doing earlier, that I'm just now doing now. You know, taking that responsibility, but. You know, I don't have no more time to be playing around. You know, I don't want to look up and then be in my 40s and be talking about, you know, I wanted to do this, that, and the other. I don't want to be that black man that don't have, you know, that don't have shit for my, you know, my children and their children. You know, I don't want to be like that. You know, I'm not going to be like that.
Well, at least you care enough. At least you care enough not to become that type of statistic. But that's the kind of thing right there that concerns me, because as men, we are supposed to be protecting. As men, we are supposed to be showing the way. And that's not what we're doing. We are not actually guiding these people out of anything. And if they pull this off in Detroit, in New York, in New Orleans, in Atlanta, in D.C., in Baltimore, if they pull off this gentrification effort that they're doing right now, I mean, if they can pull it off there, they can pull it off anywhere, that we will have a de facto apartheid system in America, where even though whites are the numerical minority, they are flexing their muscles as the economic and social majority. So they're no longer ruling from the top, they're ruling from the bottom, as it were, since we'd be counting money. And we as black men simply sat on the sidelines and watched all of that occur, but we didn't actually do anything to prevent it from happening. Now, what I'm saying is that what we're not recognizing is that it is our survival that hangs in the balance. You cannot sit here and talk about how you're going to survive, and yet you've allowed them to basically annihilate you, is what's happened, because as Dr. Umar Johnson explains in 7 a.m., you know, that economic death precedes biological death, and we have just sat here and waited for that to happen. How do we deal with something like that? Now, I want to ask you how we deal with something like that, with a 50% unemployment rate for black males in Detroit. Give me your perspective on how you remedy that. From the situation that you all are standing in, how would you remedy that?
The first thing I would do is organize the black men, organize the ones that actually want to work, that want to build, start from the grassroots level. You know, we don't have to have everybody, not everybody's going to be included in it. We have the barbershops, we have the barber colleges, we get snow here, maybe organize a snow removal company, organize businesses, organize skills that can make, you know, the young men employable, so that they can take, you know, the skills their skill set, and they could, to generate income, to create their own business, teach them how to work together, teach them how, you know, what it is, what it means to own a franchise, what it means to build a business from the ground up. I think that the young black men and even the men that's my peers, you know, they have to see us building. I can't speak for the men that's older than me, like that's like my father's age, that's like in the 60s, late 50s. You know, those people, I think that they're gone, they're lost. That's all they want to do is be workers. That's all they're going to be is workers. And they don't know anything about black first. They don't know anything about black economic empowerment. And the people that we have to reach are the people that's in my peer group, the people that's in their late 20s, early 30s, who still want to wake up, who still are waking up and who have, you know, woken up. Those are the ones that we work with, and we start building for the young people. The young people, they're engaged in crime and gangs and things of that nature because they don't see anybody building. They don't see anybody providing that opportunity for them. So black men, we can stop being cowards. We can start working. We can start investing with each other. I know you said something a while ago. You know, in one of your videos, you said something to the fact that black men must define themselves not by how many women we sleep with, but by how many black men or how many men we can work with. So we have to start working together. Whatever piques your interest. If you're into being a barber, then you know you do that. If you build a barbershop, build a beauty salon, build a, you know, a school where you can teach other people those skills. You know. Build something where you can, you know, give back to your community in the form of a scholarship or in the form of, you know, a grant or something, not a grant, but something that could send, like, other people to school because the young people to college, because we do need our doctors, lawyers, and our engineers. We need the field trips. We need the trips out of town where we could show the young people, the young boys and girls, something other than what's just in Detroit, you know. We can take them over to Canada. We can take them down south. We can take them on the east or the west coast. You know, we can show them other things other than what's in the city so they can have, you know, that that sense of high aspirations. I think that would just be the start, just actually being out there, building, engaging in the community, protecting the community, and not just sitting around waiting for something. I think that would be the first step that I would take. I would get together with a couple of brothers who are on the same page, similar ideas, like attainments, you know, same mindset as me. Develop, you know, a business plan, figure out what we're going to do, what we're going to build, and just go from there. Whether it's going to be a restaurant or a gymnasium or a fitness center. Or a snow removal company or a landscaping company. And then once we get the business going, then we can get the scholarships going and stuff like that to send the young boys and girls off to school, because not everybody, like I said, is going to be a barber. Not everybody's going to be a graphic designer or a photographer, excuse me, or a photographer or some type of skill that or craft that they can readily, you know, work for themselves. Some of them we need the engineers, we need the doctors, we need the lawyers. You know, we need those careers out of our young people. But for those who may say that, hey, I want to be a businessman or I want to be an entrepreneur, then we can put them with other movers and shakers around the city. We can have a PDA or we can have a Dr. Umar Johnson come out and, you know, speak to them, you know, to uplift them, you know, to give them that exposure. The people that's in their 50s and 60s, to me, they're dead. The people that's my age and younger, those are the ones that I'm concentrating on and stuff like that. Those are the ones that I want to live my – I give my efforts to. Not to say that I don't love and respect my elders, no matter what type of mindset they have, but they're not going to be, from what I've seen, they're not going to be in a position that they don't even have a mindset where they want to do anything other than they're working.
Well, it looks like one of the other callers said before, most of your older people today, they've already surrendered. As far as they're concerned, they've already given up the fight. They don't want no trouble. They just want to go somewhere so they can lay down and die. But they have already, they've already given up the fight. There is, they're not even toothless lions. They're just toothless frogs at this point. They're not fighting nobody. They're not
right.
trying to overcome anything. They have already surrendered to the powers that be. And now
right.
they want
and
to do the same thing.
I'm going to make
some calls here, but I'll let you have the last word.
All right. And from the military point of view, you know, you could be honorably discharged out of the service, but if you're a black person and you don't want to fight, get the hell off the battlefield and let the young soldiers, let us who still want to fight, get out there and fight. All right, TBA, black first, and keep doing what you're doing, brother, and I'm going to keep on supporting you, keep on supporting the cause.
Black first, brother, thank you very much. Let's see if I can take another phone call. Caller from 916, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, this is William calling from Sacramento, California.
What's on your mind, William?
I'm calling because I noticed, I've definitely been dealt to a lot of black leaders out there from through the Dr. Umar Johnson, and I know that they say that our black leaders, even though we have differences in opinions from time to time, we still need to come together for the one cause. That's for black empowerment. But the thing is, sometimes like you preach a lot of capitalism, which I am for, but also I would listen to Dr. Umar, and he, as a pan-Africanist, I hear him say things like, we need to move away from capitalism and find a new economic system. So sometimes I get a little confused, not that I can't form an opinion on my own, but I just get, sometimes I seem like I'm getting led astray. So I just want to hear your opinion about that, and I already know how you feel about capitalism from a pan-Africanist standpoint, and just other black leaders that might have a problem with capitalism and feel that it is a detriment to only black people, but just the world in general.
Okay, I don't really understand what I'm being asked, though.
I'm asking, okay, some people feel that capitalism is not the way to go. They feel like capitalism is actually something that's a detriment to other societies, other countries. It actually holds them back. And I hear Dr. Umar preach that from time to time. So I want to get your opinion because I know Dr. Umar is someone who I look up to, and I hear you reference him. Many times throughout your broadcast.
So what you're saying is how do I feel about the idea that capitalism is not perfect? Well, first of all, I got a lot of respect for Umar Johnson. He's not somebody I just talk about. He's somebody I've talked to. And he is
okay.
in the documentary 7 a.m. He's in it. Dr. Claude Anderson is in it. Multimillionaire Don Peebles is in it. Bet Pulley, author of The Billion Dollar Bet, is in it. Alayla Bundles, great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker, is in it. Shalimar Blakely, the executive director of the African-American Chamber of Commerce of Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, try saying that three times fast, is in it. But yes, Umar Johnson, I've spoken to him at length, and I put up clips online about that. Is capitalism a perfect system? No. The reason that black people are so wary of capitalism is because we have forgotten that we created all economic systems. We created finance, and we have been intimidated by it because we have watched as an oppressor class has we've seen the way that economics can be used as a form of warfare. Dr. John Henry Clark once said it, and he said it so well, when he said that in the mind of the European scholars, when they looked at the Garamantian, they said it was a war chariot. And Dr. Clark teaches us that it was a wheat wagon. Not a war wagon. It was a wheat wagon, not a chariot. But he made the point that, but in the mind of the European scholars and in European thought, everything that moves for war because they are a war-conscious people. So you see, capitalism, which was, and economics, which is was simply created as a medium of exchange, was taken by European society and done like everything else. How can we weaponize it? everything that they look at, they always consider, how can I use this as a weapon? The Chinese had had gunpowder for 200, 300 years before the Europeans found it. The Chinese used it for celebration. That was all they used gunpowder for, to celebrate. The Europeans saw it and said, I can conquer nations with this. I can kill by the thousands and conquer everything I see with this. How is it that the Chinese had that stuff for centuries, never killed a single person on purpose? The Europeans grabbed it specifically for the purposes of killing people because their mind worked differently when it came to the subject of this substance. They first decided, if nothing else, how can I kill? How can I kill? And if I cannot kill, how can I destabilize or immobilize or neutralize with this? How does this help me to gain power over other people? Not just to ensure my own survival, but to gain power over you. How do I do that? So when you consider that so many of us in the world have been on the wrong side of this new economic paradigm as created by the European powers over the cultivated over the last 1,000 years, hell yeah, we're apprehensive about it. Hell yeah, we're pulling back. We're not happy about this. Of course we're apprehensive. Why wouldn't we be? Why would we not be apprehensive about it? Here's the problem, brother. Here is the great problem. The great problem is, first and foremost, listen to me very carefully when I tell you this here, okay? I want you and everybody else to be listening carefully to what I'm about to tell you. Brother, the war is over. Did you get that?
I might a little bit.
Okay, you need to get to your phone, brother. Folk from California, y'all kill me, man. Y'all are really killing me. I need your phone closer to your face.
All right, can you hear me?
Okay, I said, did you hear what I just said?
Yeah. War is over.
The war over whether or not the world will pursue capitalism is over. That would be as silly at this point as saying that we're going to get the world to abandon oil or to abandon computers. That war is, and we're going to go back to writing on pens and paper. Brother, that ain't happening. That's not happening. We can daydream and fantasize all we want to. That ain't going to occur. So what I need to know is, what is your plan for maneuvering and navigating and operating in a world that runs on computers? What is your plan for maneuvering and navigating and operating in a world that runs on oil? What is your plan for maneuvering and navigating and operating in a world that runs on capitalism? Because it ain't going away. And if you don't learn it, you will starve. So what's your plan to master it? Because it's silly for us to debate about whether or not we should accept it or not. The war is over. The world has accepted it. It'll take you a century or more to wean the world off of capitalism. In the meantime, you're going to wither and die.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. Like I said before, sometimes...
I mean, because you're going to starve to death in 2 weeks. It takes 2 weeks for the human body to starve to death. It's going to take you 100 years to get the world to turn its back on capitalism. So you're going to starve in 2 weeks, but you need 100 years. That's why... As an academic exercise, of course we can talk about the need to replace capitalism, but I need you to understand the difference between an academic exercise and a plan. It's one thing to discuss replacing capitalism in the abstract. It is another thing to say that, and here's what we're going to do to replace capitalism. that's a nice little fantasy, but it don't work. And nobody is advocating that at this point because there is no alternative right now. There is none. There isn't any.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And like I say, from time to time, I listen to other black guys that are in the front, out there in the forefront, and occasionally they would speak about economic systems other than capitalism and how we need to abandon capitalism. So, you know, I just want to make sure I stay on point because I'm a supporter of capitalism, and I agree with you 100%, and I listen to your broadcast all the time, and it always makes sense to me. But like I say, from time to time I hear other black people and people that I'm comrades with who may be a little more informed than me, a little more in the forefront, and they might from time to time talk about other economic systems other than capitalism and how capitalism is a detriment to other societies.
Yeah, I mean, that's an academic exercise spoken from the defeatist standpoint. Brother, if you've been listening to a bunch of defeatists, of course. Man, that's like somebody who failed math class telling you that the world needs to move away from math. Well, of course he wants you to move away from math. He failed. But you don't see anybody who can add 2 + 2 telling you that we need to move away from math. So the real question is, why don't we teach this failure how he can stop whining about his failure and actually become a success? And the reason for that is because it is much easier to whine about your failure than it is to understand how you can succeed. Because if we wiped out capitalism tomorrow morning, here's the dirty little secret, brother. Here's the dirty little secret. If you wiped away capitalism tomorrow morning, do you know what you'd end up with? We can go back to a barter system if you want to. How long do you think that barter system is going to last? Simple question. I mean, what are you going to replace that capitalist system with? Whenever I ask people, they never have an answer. They always try to come up with some quasi-religious scheme, but they can't show you any place on earth or in history where their scheme works. And when you ask them, okay, explain to me the details, they can't. They'll tell you that some place existed a long time ago, but they can't. They can't tell you how their little alternative is going to work. And the reason they can't tell you is because it does not. It's never existed, and it doesn't. Case in point, the grasshopper and the ants. Now, do you all remember the old Aesop fable of the grasshopper and the ants?
No, I don't remember that one.
Okay. There's a great cartoon made by Disney or Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, one of them. And in the cartoon, it's a cartoon of Aesop's fable, The Grasshopper and the Ants. To make a long story short, it's talking about the cycle of the year and how during the spring and winter during the summer and fall, ants will start gathering for winter. And in this fable, the grasshopper is playing on his flute and dancing a jig and telling the ants that they work too hard and work too much, and they need to play with him. And he's out there all summer dancing his jig and everything else. The ants are sitting there stockpiling for the winter. When winter showed up, what happened? The ants all went underground to their food. The grasshopper was locked outside in the bitter cold. No food, no shelter, no provisions. I submit to you today, brother, that grasshopper is the average black person. Now, the problem with capitalism is we're not even attempting. If I dropped every black person off into a barter system, they would still be the poorest people in the world. Because do you know how much harder it is to grow your own food, get your own fresh water, educate your own children, make your own linen? Businesses today, how are you going to provide all those things for your own family? Capitalism came into existence because it is superior to all the other systems. Instead of one family making all these things that they need, the society works together as a collective for profit. not for socialism or because of government direction or central planning, but for profit. We make what is needed. And the more that is needed, the more profitable it is. The more profitable it is, the more you are rewarded. The more you are rewarded, the better you will do. And other people will work to innovate also because they want some of those rewards. Now, you remove that system and go back to something else. You've removed this tremendous reward system. Okay, that's fine. You can do that. But what makes you think human nature is going to change? That somehow we're going to wake up and understand this very clearly. And I want to say this to you, brother, and to everybody else listening out there right now. Listen to the sound of my voice. Understand what I'm about to tell you. Remember this. The niggas that ain't working today ain't gonna work if you get rid of capitalism tomorrow. The same black males who are refusing to work together, refusing to cooperate, refusing to innovate, telling you that reading and writing and counting is for the white man, those Negroes will be telling you the same thing the face of the earth tomorrow. They would be saying that reading, writing, and counting is for bougie niggas. All that learning computers is for bougie niggas. That's what they would tell you. They were telling you that white folk were the reason they didn't like it. You get rid of the white folk, now they're telling you bougie niggas are the reason they don't like it. And do you know how I know it's the truth? Take a look at Tariq Nasheed in Hidden Colors. Take a look at his experience. Are black males getting together with him and saying, brother, I support this project? Hell no, he's got niggas all over the place trying to bootleg it. Trying to steal it and download. That's what Tariq has got. Now, you're going to blame that on white folk? That's white folk telling them that you need to be giving this away. I thought you said that white folk were the reason we couldn't work together. Okay, we have an equation where white people are not even a small part of the equation, and you're still telling us what you can't do and what you won't do. Capitalism is not the driving force behind their laziness. Capitalism is not the reason that they're not trying. Capitalism is today's excuse for them not trying. You get rid of capitalism, and they'll just go with something else. They will just come up with another rationale for why they don't need to get up. But the goal is to not get up. They're not interested in building. They're not trying to build. They're not trying to work together. Remember what I told you before about black males have not been conditioned to work together as a unit. It's a foreign concept to them. So if we got rid of it tomorrow morning, brother, we'd be right back where we are today, because the first thing that you're going to do is what the previous caller had said. I said, how do you fix this? He said, the first thing I would need to do is organize black men. In other words, get black men to work together as a group. That would be the first thing you would have to do. No matter what economic system you are going to try to think up, your first step is going to be, okay, I need to get these men together as a group. But wait a minute. We weren't able to get them together as a group under capitalism. What makes you think that lowering the goalpost is going to get them to work together? What makes you think that's going to occur?
So at this point, do you think it's feasible for black people to one day come together and work together as a collective? Is it possible? Because honestly, when I look outside, I get inspired when I listen to your broadcast, but every time I step outside my front door, it's just like it all goes away. Every time I try to talk to my cousins and friends and people that I grew up around, it just all goes away because it just seems like it's not resonating. It's just an idea that's not resonating with them.
Now, your first mistake first mistake that you made there was you said, I look around where I am. That's your first mistake. Stop looking around. Stop doing that. Stop looking around at other people. How did we get into this mess? We got into this mess because we are the victims of European countries and European people's relentless push for power, wealth, and influence. Did you get that? We are the victims of European society's relentless, unrelenting, never-ending push for power, wealth, and influence. That's it. That was how we got into this. We got into this because they saw a way to come up by exploiting all the rest of us. And that's the only way you're going to get out of this. We got into this because of somebody else's push for power, wealth, and influence. And we will only get out of this by developing one of our own. And that starts with you as an individual. Well, TBA, how do I know that I have power, wealth, and influence? I have to just ask you one question. What do you own? What do you control? And what are you passing down? I'm saying that as a whole sentence. What do you own, control, and are passing down? Now, if you can answer all three of those questions in the affirmative, then you, my friend, have at least the basic tools for power, wealth, and influence. You've got the basic tools. Now, let me ask you a question, brother. What do you own?
The
answer is I don't own anything. And the overwhelming majority of black males who pick up the phone and call me say the exact same thing. TBA, I don't own anything. Do you own any land? No, I do not. Do you own a business? No, I do not. Do you own any tools? No, I do not. And then you're asking me why it is you cannot compete against other people. Because they have things that they own, control, and are passing down. And you haven't done that. How old are you, brother? Old are you?
I'm 29.
You're 29 years old. How much education do you have?
High school diploma.
Okay. You're 29 years old. You have a high school diploma. You own nothing, you control nothing, and you're passing nothing down. How many kids do you have?
I have two kids.
You have two kids. You are 29 years old with nothing but a high school diploma. You own nothing. You control nothing. You're passing nothing down. And you've got two kids who can expect to inherit nothing from their father. But he didn't have a problem bringing them into this world. Because, don't y'all understand, them draws was just so good. And that's the reason that it happens. See, if you focus a bit more on building power, wealth, and influence for yourself, a little bit less on what's going on between them females' legs, that's what happens. But we got real problems out of California right now, y'all. We got California the black folk that I've had calling from California for the last 2 weeks have been absolutely atrocious. And I'm not beating up on you. I'm saying that you've been the most coherent call that I've received from California in the last 2 weeks. Black men in California are doing nothing. They are doing nothing worth talking about. And then they're asking, how can I get different results? And you are up against a Latino influx that is playing no games and taking no prisoners. I need you to understand that you are up against a Latino movement that is playing no games and taking no prisoners. But as black males, we are telling ourselves that we have some type of, to be totally honest with you, I don't know what most black males are telling themselves, especially in California. I don't know what y'all, I don't know what's going on there. I really just don't even have a clue what black males are thinking in California. I do know that they are not attempting to develop any type of power, wealth, and influence for themselves. The truth is that y'all out there in California are waiting for somebody else to bring it to you. You are waiting for some white man to come riding in on a horse or a limo and to give you what you need as men. The reason that I don't have children is because I want to make sure that I have my idea of power, wealth, and influence before I bring them into this world. I would never imagine having kids and I've got nothing to give them. Now, I do have something to give them now, but understand, I'm trying to get to that Trump level. I'm trying to get on that Trump level. That's what I'm trying to do. So that little stuff is not going to cut it for me. Not going to cut it for me. Now, as a black male who is 29 years old, this last question should be the most important thing of all. What is your plan to acquire power, wealth, and influence so that you will actually have something that you own and control and can pass down to those two children that you worked so hard to make?
To be honest with you, I would say that I don't know how to put this, but I would say I just discovered kind of the wealth of knowledge probably about 2 years ago. And what I mean by when I say that is that I was raised by a single mom who never taught me the importance of a power, wealth, and influence. I was raised on everything subsidized housing, subsidized food, subsidized living in general. And the way I was taught is as soon as I turned 18, I had to fend for myself and find a way for myself, even if that's also to continue the generation, the same path of a subsidized living. Honestly, brother, if I had someone like you earlier on in my childhood, I think I really, really would have made a difference. I would have really took a different route. Now, I'm not trying to put off my responsibilities and things that I was supposed to do off on anyone else, but, I mean, you have to take into consideration parents and the way that my mind was steered as a child. But now that I think I know at this point, I'm not sure what direction to take, but I'm definitely every single day of my life, and that's why I'm calling in, that's why I'm listening to you guys. I'm definitely thinking about what path I want to take and what things I can do, because my kids are still, you know, I have a 10-month-old and a 5-year-old, so I still have some time to make a change before they become adults and I can leave something for them.
I'll tell you what you do then. Listen carefully. First order of business is you go to your mother's house, you say, "Mama, you was a dumbass slut," and you slap the dentures out of her mouth. I mean, try to break your hand on the side of her face, because she has committed treason against her own child. That's treason. If you know where your father is, you can go find him and super kick him in the back of his neck. Try to break your toes when you do. That way you'll know you're doing it, you're kicking hard enough. Try to break your toes if you can.
And I don't know where he is, but go ahead.
Hire a private investigator. They can help out. Your mom knows who your dad is. She's just lying. In any case, trust me, there's records. She hire a private investigator. They'll find them. Y'all are going to find out that most of y'all, your mama's talking about they don't know who your dad is or they don't know where he is. Most of those women are lying. By the way, y'all do need to understand that. Most of you kids out there who are raised by single mothers, I want you all to understand that most of your mamas are lying to you. They are lying to you. They know who your father is. And they probably know where he is. But you see, in her mind, she's winning because to the bitter female mind, not to all female minds, but when females become bitter, and let's just be honest, there's a bunch of bitter broads out there now. In the bitter female mind, she's winning if I can make the child hate you or keep the child from you. I'm winning. Because you have to understand, she lost the power, wealth, and influence game a long time ago. She has nothing motivating her or driving her every day she gets out of bed except her hate. Most black women are consumed with hate because most black women played the game of dancing with white supremacy. They became bastard baby makers with babies and realized too late that that eliminated you. Congratulations, you have a baby, so you have a welfare check, but you will never have power, wealth, and influence. Game over, you lose already. And so they wake up one day and all they have is their hate. All they got is their hate. So just understand something to all you black males out there. Hire your private investigator. He will be able to find your fathers. I'll just make one statement to you here, brother. If you committed a crime, can you tell me what you could do to make yourself disappear? So that the government, if they were looking for you, could not find you. Tell me where in America you would go where you would say, okay, I'm safe here. They'll never find me. Tell me.
I can't.
Okay. Thank you. Understand something very, very carefully, because we always want to talk about these conspiracy theories. The United States government is all powerful. It can do anything. It can do anything. And yet, when it comes to finding your daddies, oh, the government's weak. It can't find that. That's the one thing. He can't be found. That's what tells you that black males today are weak and sissified, and they were getting statements by their mothers. You see, when you have power, you let anybody say that they're stronger than you. Females don't think that way. Females think in a very small, myopic, compartmentalized way. As a male, you are supposed to think logically and linearly. There are only two people in this world who cannot be found. The people who are not there and the people who don't want to be found. And when you got people who have hundreds of millions of dollars and yet law enforcement can find them, why would you think that your daddy, who ain't got two pennies to rub together, can't be found? He doesn't have nearly the ability to conceal his existence. He can be found. You do not want to wait 40 damn years, but he can be found. Don't y'all young folk let anybody lie to you. Your mama does not want you to find him. You know why? Because she's scared to death that you're going to hear the other side of the story. Because she's tried to make you all believe that she's this wonderful, pious, virtuous woman, and y'all don't know about the threesomes and the videotapes and the women. Most single mothers have been with women, by the way. They never tell y'all that either. They will tell you, no, I've never kissed a woman. I've never done that. When in reality, most of them did it in college. Well, why does she lie and tell me no? When you ask her, she will say, well, that one doesn't count. I was in college. That doesn't count. Now, I'm sure you've encountered that with females where you ask them how many men they slept with, and she tells you three. And then you talk to somebody else, and it's like, wait a minute. There's two other people you slept with that I found out about. I thought you said it was only three. Well, they didn't count. They weren't really my boyfriends. Now, I'm sure you've encountered that.
Yeah.
What was that?
But yeah.
I'm breaking them down tonight, y'all. I'm not trying to, son. I'm not trying to break you down. But somebody needs to tell you the whole damn truth.
Absolutely.
Somebody needs to tell you the whole damn truth. I mean, this is what females do. And that was why the white supremacist government empowered the females, because they know that when females are faced with adversity from males, they will back down. And now they taught their sons to back down also, only they want you to back down to females. And I'm telling you two words, brother, two words that I want you to start living by. Challenge everything. Don't accept anything anyone says. Challenge everything, including what I tell you. I'm not afraid to tell you to challenge it because I know what's going to happen when you do. Challenge everything, starting with your parents. Now, after we're done putting the smack down on mom and dad so that we can end that little useless relationship there, the next thing that you need to start doing is acquiring power, wealth, and influence for yourself. And what that means is that you start asking yourself, what do I own, what do I control, and what am I passing down? Right now, your answer to all these those questions is negative. Time to start getting some positives. Do you have a job?
Yes.
Oh, that yes came real shaky. Let me try this again, just one more time. Think it over before you answer. Do you really have a job?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, what kind of future do you have at this job?
It's not a whole lot of room for growth. There you go.
Okay. Tell me what kind of job you would like to, and one. Tell me about a job that you want to have that has a future. Then, since you don't like the one we're at, obviously you need to make a change for the betterment of your kids. So, what kind of job do we need to get to then, so that we can have a future? Well, what kind of job are you planning to go to so you can have a future? Because right now we know this ain't working. Okay, what's Dad's plan to get a job with a future?
Well, I heard you mention it a few times throughout your broadcast about computer programming, and I will admit that's something that I'm not too familiar with at this point, but I would like to challenge myself and kind of go into that field because it is something that's high demand. In Sacramento, California, there's not much that I see that's out there with a future that will provide any kind of room for growth or opportunity. I don't see a whole lot of careers out there, but I do see that the booming business in computer programming, just computer period.
Now, please keep in mind, everybody, what I asked him. What I asked him was, what kind of job are you going to get that is going to have a future for you? The answer to that question, son, is none. There is no job that you are going to get that has a future. None. The answer is none. That's the kind of job that's going to have a future for you.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. All right. You starting to connect the dots now?
Yeah. Okay. Just hit me over the head.
Say again?
I said, yeah, just hit me over the head.
Yeah. That's the problem. That is the problem. There is no job that you are going to get that is going to give you power, wealth, and influence. None. If you saw my trailer for 7 a.m., I say it in there. Working is not a path to being a worker is not a path to prosperity. Being a worker is simply a path to more work. That's all that being a worker will do for you. So if your goal is to be a worker, answer me right quick. If you go to work for another company, how do you pass that down to your children? How are you going to, remember I said it's about what you own, control, and are passing down. How are you going to pass down that job to your children?
I can't.
Okay, you don't have to stumble over it, son. The answer is I can't. I cannot pass down a job to my children. Do you own your job?
No.
Do you control your job?
No.
Can you pass your job down?
No.
So what that means is that this job does not have the necessary requirements to provide me with power, wealth, and influence. I've given y'all the formula. Use the litmus test. Do I own it? Do I control it? Am I passing it down? And that will tell you if it will give you power, wealth, and influence. That's the formula. Now, you can use that skill that you gained to become self-employed, and we can start that process. But other than that, brother, you get there from here. You are not going to get there from here. You're just not. Keep that in mind. Computers are a wonderful thing, but you need to take up a trade or a skill. If computers are not necessarily your thing, the Latinos are out there killing Negroes in the pipe trades, in electrician work, in carpentry. They're based in the basics. They're killing Negroes at that because black men aren't even trying. You could go to school for being a mechanic in 6 months and come out making your own money as you want to. You can go to school for pipe trades, go to school for a technical skill. There's no reason you can't do that. And have your own business set up. There's no reason you can't do that unless you just don't want to. In which case, now you are about to become a traitor to your children. And let me tell you this very, very succinctly, brother. There is no place for traitors in my world. You just think white supremacy has bad plans for you. Trust me, you don't even want to think about some of the ideas I've got in mind for people who empower white supremacy by betraying their children. Because I understand how you're playing into their hands. And if you're so lazy and so gutless that you would rather just sit up and take care of yourself and, well, damn the kids, they'll figure it out. At that point, the world doesn't really need you anymore. Now, fortunately for you, it's not going to get that far along. Because, you see, you actually give a damn about your children. And you're actually going to make sure that they have something. Right?
Absolutely.
Well then, you're 29 years old, so I suggest you don't let the grass grow under your feet. You do not have a skill, do you?
No, no.
Okay, you're 29 years old, it's the summer. Why can you not go back to school and get one? Because most of the black females at your job are working and going to school. Why are you not doing the same?
You're right. There's no excuse. I'm not going to sit up here and say any excuses. There's no excuse. It's just sometimes I think we get comfortable in our jobs, in the things that we're doing, that we don't look outside of it. We get trapped in that box. And I just have to get out of that.
I always thought that when people looked at their children, it made them stronger, that it took away their fears. It's only been in my adult years that I realized that that only works on individuals who are not selfish. If a person is selfish, they don't give a damn what happens to their children. After all, I didn't want these damn kids anyway. Man, it's still about me. And at that point, you are dangerous to the rest of us. You've got a few weeks here. Why don't you start looking into taking some classes? Get a skill so that you can start taking control of your economic destiny and start building something for your sons, assuming you have sons. Why don't you start building something for them? Vince McMahon went into the wrestling business. His daughter, Stephanie, she may not have been thrilled about wrestling, but guess what? He taught her how to get body slammed. And now she's running the place. He's got somebody to pass it down to. You've got no excuse. Pipe trades, diesel, welding, carpentry, plumbing, electrician. Like I say, there's plenty of work out there, especially in California. All them illegals coming across the border are proving that every day. How is it that they can find money but you can't? Because he came to the country for the purposes of getting power, wealth, and influence. The average black male did not. This is your opportunity to change that. I will give you consideration. What I will not give you is an excuse. And that's real talk, brother. I want to hear back from you after you've enrolled. Should I take down your number so that I can call you just to make sure that happened?
Yes.
Because if you now say again?
Sure.
Okay. Well, why don't I just check back with you later? When do you think you'd be able to make those calls?
I'll get the ball rolling Monday morning.
Okay. Then I think it is worth following up with you over, and we can just make sure that you are getting off on the right foot. And when you start feeling yourself getting weak in the knees and you start wondering about whether or not this is the right thing to do, you go and take a look at those children. You take a look at those children and then you answer that question. All right?
All right.
I'll let you have the last word.
I'm an avid listener, and I learn something new every time I listen. And until you're doing what you're doing, and Black First.
Black First, brother. And if you haven't been out by our site, 7ammovie.com, why don't you go there? It'll help to encourage you.
I'll do that.
Be well worth your while. Thank you very much for checking in with us tonight. All right, you know what? I'm going to do an after hours here is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and do an after hours. So we'll go ahead and wrap up